So many, many, many years ago, when I was first engaging my faith for me and exploring and learning, I happened upon this book by Peter Kreeft. He's a professor in Boston, at Boston College. It's called Fundamentals of the Faith. And for me, just that kind of time, you know, when you're young, the concrete isn't set yet, you're impressionable. It was one of those books that just kind of impressed me and learned a lot from it. And part of it was this story that he told in it. And it's a story about this family that was living in Ireland 100 years ago, and there was the potato famine where things were really bad. People were starving to death. So this dad decides he's gonna sell everything and move to America, start anew in America. So he sells everything, gets some money, and has just enough money to buy 4 tickets for himself, his wife, his son, and his daughter. They get the money, they know that, hey, it's gonna be a long trip across the Atlantic. We gotta have some food to eat. Don't have hardly any money left over. So he bought a bunch of this stuff called hard bread and cheese. Just enough to last for about a month as they cross the Atlantic. So they get on the boat, they get in the hold of the boat, they're down there, and day one, hard bread and cheese. Day two, hard bread and cheese. Day three, hard bread and cheese. Day four, hard bread and cheese. Day five, hard bread and cheese. Day six, hard bread and cheese. And finally, the son's just like, Dad, I can't eat this anymore. I'd rather be in Ireland starving to death than eating hard bread and cheese anymore. And so the dad takes out his last nickel. Right, that's all he has left. Now, a nickel was worth a lot more back then because of inflation. You know, have you heard of inflation? So a nickel was worth a lot more, like $1 million back then. So not quite that much. So he said, okay, son, here's my last nickel. Go buy something sweet for yourself and for your sister. And so the son takes off. He's gone a long time. The dad and the mom are starting to kind of worry, like, what happened to him? And then finally, they hear him knock on the door, and he opens the door, and he comes in, and he's there. He's holding an ice cream in one hand. And in the other hand, he is flicking the nickel up in the air, and he's catching it. And his stomach looks like he's 9 months pregnant. And the dad's like, what's going on? And the son said, Dad, I had steak, and I had lobster, and I ate a bowl of stew, and I ate 4 pieces of pie. And I had apples, and I had oranges, and I had 4 bowls of ice cream besides this cone. And the dad's like, did you steal it? And the son said, no. Well, how did you get it? And the son said, Dad, when you bought the tickets, the food was included. And so he uses that to say, so many Christians don't realize what's been included in their ticket of salvation. And they spend their lives in the hull of a ship eating hard bread and cheese, miserable and bummed out, when they don't realize the feast that actually was purchased for them on the cross. So we're in this part in Colossians that's a hinge. And it's hinging for us because the next 2 chapters, chapters 3 and 4, are look at what this life is supposed to be. But before Paul gets there, he has this little 4-verse section that is pivotal. If you don't get these 4 verses, you never move out of the hole of the ship. You're gonna eat bread and cheese for the rest of your life, and then you're gonna die and wonder what happened, okay? So these are huge, important verses, brilliant. So if you remember last week, we were actually left dead. So here's what it says. Chapter 2, verse 20. If with Christ you died to the elemental spirits of the world. Chapter 2, we died to something. And we've looked at these elemental spirits. They're no good. They're the bad crew. They're the kingdom of darkness, right? So this is good news that we died to that lifestyle. We died to the hull of the ship. Don't resurrect it, is chapter 2. Don't go back to this stuff. That's actually part of the weaponry of the enemy. Mysticism, spiritualism, occult. Don't go back to that stuff. legalism, going back to Moses for what only Jesus can do for you. Don't do that. Asceticism, the no, 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 no lifestyle that some people get involved in instead of realizing, wow, we have been set free. We have freedom in Christ Jesus. And so we looked at that. We looked at the way that people judge us for certain things that we say, hey, we can do, Christmas and Easter. And I didn't have time in the first two services to explain this, but in the third service, I had more time. And so I said, we get judged on Christmas. And if you've ever looked at why the church decided to celebrate Christmas, it's really pretty cool. Because they were living in a culture that at the winter solstice, there would be this celebration where it was celebrating, hey, from this day forward, the days get longer. Light conquers darkness. That's literally the celebration. And so the church looked at them and they said, that's a shadow of Jesus. Jesus is the light that conquers darkness. Like they're celebrating like Acts chapter 17. You're worshiping the unknown God? Let me tell you who that is. You're worshiping this day? Don't worship this day. This day was designed to show you Jesus, that with him, every day grows brighter. Are you kidding, right? He defeats darkness. And they said the reason why we can celebrate it is Jesus in John 10 celebrates an unbiblical feast. It's called the Festival of Lights. It's not found in the Bible anywhere. It's celebrating post the Bible, when the Bible, the Old Testament was finished. And it's where they light the candelabra in the temple after getting rid of Antiochus Epiphanes, and miraculously, the oil lasts for 8 days. But it's not in the Bible. Jesus goes and celebrates that. And he had been from chapter 8 and 9 and 10 saying something to the crew that was following him. And it was this, I'm the light of the world. And then he goes to this festival and this is about me. I'm the light, and has this brilliant conversation really to the elemental spirits there in chapter 10. So the church said, that's what Jesus does. We're gonna leverage every single holiday we can to say what you're worshiping, the unknown thing you're worshiping, let me declare to you what it is, it's Jesus. So on Christmas Eve, we had 4,000 people come through this place. And we were able to tell 4,000 people, a bunch of them that never come to church, the explicit gospel that Jesus Christ died, rose again, and it is the only way of salvation. Man, I will leverage that every single year to tell people, just like Jesus did, he is the light of the world. So what is happening right here is, hey, that stuff, man, you died to it. Don't resurrect it. Don't let people judge you on that stuff. You're dead to it. But good news, chapter 3, verse 1. If then you have been raised with Christ, good news, we're not dead anymore, we're alive. That when you believe in Jesus Christ, you're resurrected, you're given a new life. But here's the problem with many of us. We are stuck in these patterns because we're so used to living in the hull of a ship and eating hard bread and cheese. So we have all this kind of junk that's still with us, and we got to figure out how to work it out. We still have the powers of the elemental spirits that are whispering to us. Do you know how powerful they are? They show up on page 4 of your Bible. So Cain, you know the story, goes to church. In church, he becomes jealous of his brother Abel. God comes to Cain and says, bro, look out. That envy that you're feeling right now, God literally calls it a crouching beast. Sin is a crouching beast right outside your life, and it's waiting, and it's gonna pounce on you, and you either need to resist it and overcome it, or it's gonna devour you. What happens to Cain? He doesn't resist it. Instead, he lets that envy turn into anger, and that anger turns into murder, and he kills his brother. That's the way of the world. That's what happens all the time, that we have these old methods, old ways. Sin's crouching, it has a power to it, and it wants to consume us and get us, and it's always there. It's that conversation you have with someone, And then somehow it takes this crazy left turn, and then you're getting mad and someone's pulling their gun. Happens every day. It's the comment that you make to someone, and it's not nefarious, it's just kind of off the cuff, but then that person takes it wrong and your relationship is broken by it. It's the same elemental spirits that leverage everything, crouching, waiting for envy or any little problem to leverage it and cause all kinds of destruction. We're gonna be careful. Because we even have a vocabulary in our world right now that keeps kind of pointing us away from coming up and feasting. And it's a vocabulary that keeps us in the hull of the ship. I'll give you some examples. It's a dog-eat-dog world. And I'm gonna be top dog. What does that mean? It means I'm gonna do whatever is necessary, whatever growling and barking and to make sure that I win. How about this one? The man who dies with the most toys, what do you win, right? I mean, how ridiculous is that? And yet it's in our very vocabulary. I don't get mad, I get, how stupid is that? Really? You're gonna get even? Right? Looking out for number one. All these things, the crouching beast loves it. Grudges and bitternesses. Right? It's all about the bank account. I got to get me some, right? All these things, it's our vocabulary that's keeping us in the hull of the ship. So guess what we need? We need re-education. It's what the Bible calls the renewing of the mind, right? So we're alive now, that's true, but we hold on to a bunch of stuff that's junk and cultural. And so what Paul's going to do here in this hinge is he's going to say, listen, you got to think differently. You got to think biblically. He starts to tell us how we do that. Number one, you got to think like this. If then you have been raised with Christ, seek the things that are above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. I just call this kingdom in, culture out. We got to be a people who seek the kingdom so that it begins to push all these cultural lies that are after us all the time, and it's hard. Right now, I don't know if you know this, about 50% of people under 30 get the majority of their news from TikTok. That should worry you. Owned by the Chinese. Uh-oh. Right? And it is preaching a message. And it has a certain kind of indoctrination that they want to put in there. And so our culture uses all these means, I would say more skillfully than at any other time in history, culture is educating and indoctrinating us to follow the wrong people, to follow the wrong rulers, to follow the wrong kings, right? We get following all the wrong things. We follow elephants and donkeys, don't we? Red and blue. That's what we follow. Beavers and ducks, right? Just distraction from what matters. And I can be totally distracted. Snoop Dogg and the Beatles and all the wrong things. We follow them all the time. So we got to be careful because they have a power to them. So most of us here, we've probably heard of Bidenomics. Heard of Bidenomics? Yep. Well, there's another one. It's called Swiftonomics. Have you heard of that? It's the power of Taylor Swift, right? She has added, last year, 2023, she added $5 billion, just her, $5 billion to the gross domestic product of America. I mean, it's unheard of. The numbers are, there's no one even close. Like, you just start taking off zeros when you compare her to anyone else. She is responsible for a 53% increase in young ladies watching the NFL. She added $331 million to the value of the Kansas City Chiefs, just her alone, right? That's power. What just cracked me up is when she first kind of, it came out that she was dating Travis Kelce. He's a tight end for the Kansas City Chiefs. My 10-year-old son, Myron, who loves football, who knows nothing about Taylor Swift, never even heard of her name, he kind of gets this news. He's like, wow, she's dating Travis Kelce? He goes, Dad, Now everyone will know about Taylor Swift. I mean, that's the way he viewed it. Like, she's a nobody, man. I'm like, yeah, that's one way to look at it. But this article I was reading on Swiftonomics says it goes way past money with her. When she weighs in on an issue, if it's at all close, she'll tip it her way. When she weighs in politically, she'll tip it her way. When she weighs in on gender issues, it tips it her way. When she weighs in on LGBTQ stuff, it tips it her way. That's how powerful she is. And so we gotta start asking ourselves, where do we get our cues from? Where are we getting our information from? The rulers of this world? The kings and queens of this world of culture? Is that where we get it from? Because look out. They will tip you, they will tip me in the wrong way. Where do we get our culture from? Where do we get our values from? What Paul is saying right here is this: it's gotta be kingdom in and culture out. Well, how do you do that? How do you start focusing in on what matters? Look what Paul says when he says this. If then you have been raised with Christ, seek the things that are above, kingdom in, culture out, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. What does it mean that he's seated? Let me show you some pictures. What does it mean that one person is seated in this picture? Someone said tired last service. I don't know about that, but here's another guy who is seated. Everyone's standing, they're seated. What does that mean? They're in complete control. They're in the power seat. That's what it's saying. So throughout the Bible, when you read the Old Testament, God alone is seated. Angels hover, angels stand, angels worship, angels bow, angels fall on their face. God alone is seated. What it's saying is this: God isn't anxious or worried. God isn't like, oh no, I can't believe this happened. He is seated because he is in complete control. So when it says Jesus is seated on the throne, it's saying the same thing. He's seated and he is in control. He's not worried or anxious. Right? History has shown empires come and go, don't they? Rome is gone. Constantine is gone. Napoleon's gone. The Mongols are gone. The Visigoths are gone. Even the British Empire, the sun used to not set on the British Empire, it's gone. Guess who is still seated on the throne, unworried? Jesus Christ, the King. Do you know that? Do you believe that? That changes things. Like, are you right now anxious and worried about who will win the 2024 presidential election? Yes, I am. People ask me all the time. Here's what I say. I am going to prayerfully and thoughtfully use the incredible gift of voting, 100%. I know when the righteous rule, the people rejoice. So I'm gonna use that. But after I vote, man, I'm living my life. Why? Because Christ is still seated on the throne. I'm not gonna worry about it. Jesus isn't worried about it. Have you ever had an event in your life that you thought, this is the end of the world, and had that same event turn out for good? Have you? Man, that's a giant message of the Bible. Wednesday night, we're studying someone that could have said, this is the end of the world. His name is Joseph. Did anyone have it worse than Joseph did? Hard to find someone in the Old Testament had it worse. Maybe Job, probably Job. But at 17, he's beat up by his 10 brothers, thrown into a pit, stripped of everything that identifies him, sold into slavery, taken out of his culture, all he knew, down to Egypt, where he doesn't know the language, he doesn't know the culture, he is a nothing. Sold as a slave to somebody. Works his tail off there, works up till he's the top slave in the whole house, and then guess what happens? Mrs. Potiphar, the master's wife, takes a little shine to him, right? And starts saying, come sleep with me, come sleep with me, come sleep with me. He says, no, 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 I would never do that. I won't sin against God. I won't sin against my master. No way, not gonna do it. And one day she tackles him and tries to rape him, and he runs away from her and leaves his coat. And she accuses him of rape, and he ends up in prison, forgotten. Now that's someone that could say, this is the end of the world. I can't believe this is happening to me. But you know what? Throughout Joseph's story, guess what you know? You find over and over, God is on the throne. And Joseph acknowledges that. Somehow, this is gonna work out. Somehow the dreams that God gave me, they're gonna come true. I'm trusting that. And then one day it does. Joseph is pulled out 14 years later, pulled out of the pit of prison and made prime minister of all of Egypt, probably the most powerful empire on earth at the time. Unbelievable. Because God is seated on the throne and he has a plan. How about John Bunyan? You ever heard his story? Amazing. Preaching the gospel, telling the truth. He's put in prison for it. I guess they didn't like his sermon. I complained about emails. He got thrown in prison, right? He's in prison for 12 years for preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ. Within a month, a guard hears music coming from John Bunyan's cell. He goes down there, looks in, and John Bunyan had removed one of the pegs, one of the legs of his stool, and he had whittled it into a flute. From that day forward, for 12 years, every single day, beautiful music would come from John Bunyan's cell. How good is that, man? Singing in his cell, Acts 16 stuff. And then John Bunyan's like, man, I got a lot of time right now. So he starts to write, and he writes a book. Anybody know it? Pilgrim's Progress. Voted a couple years ago, the best English novel ever written. It's been said it is the second most influential book in Christianity behind the Bible, Pilgrim's Progress, when he's in a pit, right? They get PhDs, professors of hard days. Man, they know, guess what? This is hard. This is one I choose. Christ is still seated on the throne, and he can take what I think is the end of the world, and he can turn it for good. This is what Paul is saying. You got to know this. When you set your mind on things above, remember, Jesus Christ is on the throne. He's enthroned for eternity. Nothing is gonna kick him off. He has a plan and he's gonna work it out. And it might feel right now that I don't understand this. This is the end of the world. But only he is able to take what the enemy would wanna use for evil and turn it for good in my life, in your life. It's kingdom in, culture out, right? I don't get my news from TikTok. I get my news from Bible talk, and it's good news every time I open it. You want kingdom in, culture out? Get in this book. That's what will happen to you. You get good news. Number one, get out of hold of ship. How? Set your mind on the kingdom. Seek the kingdom. Number two, set your minds on things above. Look at this. Set your mind on things above, not on the things of the earth. Kingdom in, culture out. So here's what Paul is saying. Culture has values. The kingdom has values. What are your values? Do we have kingdom values or do we have culture values? So culture is screaming at us all the time, here's what you should value. Here's what should be important. Like, you should have an easy life. You should be served. You should get more. You need more likes. You need status. You need people to praise you. You need the red carpet brought out to you. You need to be important. You need to be the center. People need to make much of you, right? Just on and on and on and on. You need to be the best version of you. Just blah, 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 blah. Culture is constantly preaching its values at us. Are they kingdom values? Is that what the kingdom agrees with? Let me give you some kingdom values that stand in stark contrast to our culture. Here they are. Number one, the first shall be, that's a reversal. Number two, blessed are those grabbing it, getting theirs. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the kingdom. Number three, love your enemies. We got lots of protests right now in our country. Lots of protests. Down with these, I hate these people. These people are terrible people. Where's the, you know what? I'm gonna love my enemy. That's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna love the people that want to kill me. Love your enemies. Number four, when I'm weak, then I'm, that's the opposite. Number five, it's better to give than receive. Number six, overcome evil with my guns. No, wait, what does it say? Overcome evil with good. And finally, if you want to be great, be the servant of all. Listen, those are in stark contrast to what our culture preaches every day. Stark contrast. What values are you putting your head on? What values are you wrapping up in your head? What values are you allowing into your heart? Because we got all these values, and one of them is going to take the throne in your life. Either the values of the kingdom or the values of your culture, and it will drive what you do. Like, here's a big one right now, self-care. Self-care is not selfish. Whenever there's a value like that, I always take it and I just run it through Jesus. Was Jesus all about self-care? You have the hardest day of Jesus's life. You can read about it in Matthew 26. He grabs three of his inner circle, Peter and James and John, and he says, come with me and pray. My soul is exceedingly sorrowful, even unto death. This thing's killing me. Help me. Pray with me. Gather with me, right? Now, if there's any day that Jesus could say, I need some self-care here. I just need to get away from people. I need to do my own thing. I gotta be about me. I gotta care for me. That'd be the day to do it. Guess what Jesus does on that day? It's John 13 at the Last Supper. The day he's gonna be betrayed, the day he's gonna go to the cross, the day all that has happened to him, beat up six times over and over and over. That day, guess what Jesus does on that day? Knows it's coming. John 13, he's sitting in this room eating this meal and it stinks because no one wanted to do the foot washing. That's the lowest, dirtiest, grossest job. Nobody wanted to do foot washing. So what does Jesus do? He says he disrobed himself and took a towel and he washed the disciples' feet, all of them. And then he says this in verse 17, you've seen me do this. Happy are you if you do this. That's not self-care, that's serving. What's so interesting to me is this, is when science catches up with the Bible. So there's these two guys, they do great studies. I read whenever a study comes out by these two guys, Dr. Grafman and Dr. Moll. They're some incredible. They're just really interesting. They did this study where they took people, depressed people, anxious people, across the spectrum. They just want to take all these different kinds of people. They put this helmet on them that scanned their head. And they had them do altruistic stuff, serving other people, not about their interests, about others. And when they were doing that, they measured their brain. What fires in your brain when you're serving other people? Guess what fires in the human brain when you serve someone? The pleasure center. The center of your brain that fires when you eat a really good meal. Trout almondy and a light Dijon mustard sauce. Bon appetit. When you're having sex, it's that part of your brain that fired. And they're like, wow, depressed people, fired. Anxious people, fired. Happy people, fired. Didn't matter. All of them, when they served, they found joy. See, we get these cultural messages that we gotta keep comparing to. What does the Bible say? What does the Bible say how I'm to live? Set your mind on things above, not on things of the earth. Kingdom in, culture out. We were wired for it, literally. When Jesus says, if you serve, you're happy, he knew the very wiring of your brain. You're wired for it, kingdom wiring. I love that, love it. So how do you do that? How do you care more about the kingdom than I do about culture? Two last things. Number one, you gotta know what life is. Look at verse 3. For you have died, and your life is hidden with Christ in God. And when Christ, who is your life, you got no life. First, your life is hid with Christ. What that means is this: you're protected, you're covered. Every single human from Genesis 3 all the way to today has been seeking clothing. We all feel inadequate. We all feel broken. We all feel like posers. We all feel like we're stupid. We all feel that way. And so all of us, we mask it. We cover it. We make sure we get certain kinds of jobs and don't do certain kinds of things that might expose us. All of us do it because we're all seeking clothing since we are exposed as naked and ashamed in the garden. Here's what Jesus says. I'm your clothing. I'll protect you. I will robe you in my righteousness. You're hidden me. You don't have to wear masks anymore. You don't have to pretend anymore. You don't have to play games anymore. You can be honest because you're hidden me and I'll protect you. Number two, he is your life. What is life to you? When you have free time and you're thinking, what are you seeking in your head? That's your life. What are you about on Monday morning, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and Thursday? What is it? That's what you're setting your mind on. That is life to you. If I could just have this, that would be life. Is it getting applause? If people just appreciated me and applauded me, that would be life. Is it being accepted? Is it being liked? Is that life for you? Is it achievement? If I could just get here financially, if I could just get here reputationally, if I could just get here with how people think about me, if I could just get here financially, whatever it is, that's life to you. It's what you're seeking. It's what we would say, well, that's life. And those things, they're okay servants. They're terrible kings. They will drive you. If it's all about those, look out, you'll get angry. People aren't appreciating me. They're not grateful for what I bring. I'm out of here. You get depressed. Oh, I want this goal and I didn't get this goal and I'm depressed. They're good servants, terrible kings. What the Bible says is this, he's your life. When you get that, when you actually allow that to settle into your soul, you are so set free. For me, for instance, my life is not Sunday morning if you like my sermon or not, or if you're gonna come back next week, or if you're gonna give me an attaboy. That's not life to me, okay? Because Jesus is my life and he has satisfied me and he has made my cup overflow. And everything else, man, they're servants. He's the king. Man, it's so free. And that's not always been the way at Edgewater. I've said this many times, first 5 years at Edgewater was, I preach this way, like me, aren't I smart? And it was miserable because that was my king. So Monday morning, I'd be miserable. Man, I didn't get very many attaboys. People didn't laugh at that joke. And I was miserable, just a roller coaster. Oh, I got the attaboys. Oh yeah, awesome. Man, miserable. No thanks. Now I just find truth and I tell it to you, whether you like it or not, whether you laugh or not, whether you attaboy me or not. Man, it's so freeing. Ah, oh, so freeing. Because sermon preaching is not my life. Jesus is my life. Man, it's so freeing. Do you know this? Do you know how protected you are when you allow this into your soul? Opinions don't drive you. Culture doesn't drive you. Likes don't drive you. Jesus is my life and he likes me. Done. Done. Jesus likes me. My wife likes me. I could care less about anything else. Man, I got those two. Everything else is just icing. It allows you then to actually just enjoy life, which is the final point. You've got to hold onto this hope. Look at this. When Christ, who is your life, appears, do you know that Jesus Christ, the King, will appear one day? It's coming. When Christ, who is your life, appears, then you also, put your name in there, Matt Heverly, you will appear with him in glory. Glory. What we lost in Genesis 1, what we've been trying to clothe and hide and mask for thousands and thousands of years, we'll get that glory back. It's happening. See, we fail in letting the kingdom in and culture out when we forget something about this world. We make this world too big. It's too important. So then we got to really care about its values and how people think about us. And it's all now here, the earth. You know what the Bible says about us? It says we're pilgrims. Passing through. That's all earth is. We're just pilgrims passing through. You know what earth is? It's a rest stop. Do you guys like rest stops? I do. I'll take a high school trip every once in a while. I took one a couple of years ago down to Mexico. And the first thing I did is just start up at some rest stops. And I'd make all the guys run 100-yard dashes. You know why? I want them tired and going to sleep. That's what I want. So I'm going to wear you guys out. Get back in. It stunk in the van, but man, they were tired and they went to sleep. I love a rest stop. What happens if you try to live at a rest stop? If you make it your life, you know what happens to the rest stop? Go to the one right outside of Merlin. You'll find out. It gets trashed because it cannot handle the weight of life. Earth is just a rest stop. And when you realize that, this is just a rest stop. I'm a pilgrim. I'm passing through. Then guess what happens? You're set free to enjoy it in a whole new kind of way. You don't put pressure on it to satisfy your every single need. It's got to do it. No, it's just a rest stop. I'm glad it's clean, right? You appreciate it. I'm glad there's toilet paper here. Praise God for that, right? You become very grateful when you realize I'm on a pilgrimage. Glory isn't here yet. One day it will appear. One day I'll be the way I'm supposed to be. But right now, I'm just a pilgrim. Man, you enjoy your family so much more. They don't have to make much of you or be something and forcing them to appease you or live vicariously through them. They're my family and I love them. You appreciate your health. You appreciate a good meal. You appreciate life so much more because it's not everything. It's a rest stop. But one happy day, Jesus the King will return and I will return with glory. How good is that? This is what Paul is saying. If you want to hinge out of the hull of the ship and enjoy the feast that God has for you, seek the kingdom. Set your mind on the values of that kingdom. Know what your life is and hold this hope of coming glory. And it transforms you. This is simple Christianity 101 right here. Fundamentals of the faith.